Welcome to Indie Movie Cast, the podcast for indie movie makers by indie movie makers. I'm Alex, and today I'm here with
Jay
and
Dominic.
And today we have the beautiful and talented
Hannah.
Hannah is our special co-host today. How are you doing, Hannah?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. Hannah is a local movie maker here in Albuquerque, just like we are. If you heard our show before, you know that Jay, Dom, and I are three parts of Ultimatum Pictures. We are local indie movie makers in Albuquerque. And Hannah was part of Ultimatum Pictures for one of our movies. She edited Super Atomic Commies, which you can check out on our website. And but she's also a writer and director, and she why don't you talk about yourself, Hannah? What do you do?
Well, I've wanted to write and direct films since I was, I'd say, about 12. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in New Mexico. I'm a third generation Albuquerquean, but I went to film school in Los Angeles at Loyola Marymount University, and then went straight into the reality TV world. Did about.
So you're one of those film school people.
I'm a film school kid for sure. I mean, mostly I was concerned with getting, you know, a typical like liberal arts education, but it was nice to do it in LA and have filmmaking be my main focus since it's my passion. And it was weird. I graduated right when everyone was taking off in the reality TV business. So pretty much my friends and I were all producing by the time we were 25, and I moved to New York and was producing on the show Wife Swap, and I worked on a bunch of MTV shows.
Yeah, so you've kind of done it all. You've done reality shows, then you went on to, you made short films, you make music videos, right?
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah, and you actually made a music video pretty recently. We served as your crew, but you've made a couple of those.
Yeah, I'm really enjoyed getting to know the Albuquerque film community. I moved back in 2006 to direct one of the Governor's Cup winners, and so
the Governor's Cup is something that happens here in Albuquerque. It's a pretty cool thing where, I mean, as far as, you know, government,
well, they've
subsidized things
on a sense.
Oh, have they? Well,
now it's only for high school kids.
Yeah, it's only for high school students now. Whereas 2 years ago, it was for anybody, any New Mexican resident, but now they switched it to high school students.
Well, that's really lame. Well, anyway, that's good for you high school kids. Go for it. But anyway, you basically wrote a script and you won a grant from the government, basically, to make your film, right?
Yeah, there were 452 submissions, and it was scripts that were 10 pages or less. And I actually submitted three scripts. One of them became a finalist, and I had to fly back from New York to interview with a panel of judges. And then there were four winners, each who got $5,000. Towards a budget, and also donated were equipment and incredible union mentors and the entire crew of students who were underneath the mentors. So
that's
I had a crew of 45 in the desert in Roswell, and we shot on Super 16 on an Arri Flex camera.
Wow, you actually shot with film, and you made a great movie. It was called Birthday, and you can find it online. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Fantastic.
That's a good one. Check it out.
Yeah, it's a great movie. But and you also, as your day job, it's kind of funny as indie movie makers in Albuquerque, because our day jobs are in like the mainstream movies. But you also are a casting person, right? Here for things that are shot here in Albuquerque.
Exactly. Yeah. I actually met my boss because she volunteered her services to cast the Governor's Cup films. So she sent me auditions when I was still living in New York, and I cast my short with her. And then she had a position on the TV show Wildfire when I moved back, so I started as her casting assistant.
How cool. Yeah, so it pays to know people sometimes, or meet people.
Definitely. I mean, the Governor's Cup really opened up, you know, the whole world to me.
Yeah, and you've done a lot, and you've done casting on a lot of cool movies. Like, name a few you've done just recently.
Okay, I worked on The Book of Eli, Swing Vote, Sunshine Cleaning, Brothers, Men Who Stare at Goats, Terminator 4, Salvation.
Wow.
Yeah,
all the big ones.
A lot of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, your name's in the credit in a lot of movies that I've noticed. A lot more
every
than
movie
me.
That we go see that was shot here, we can. Oh, there's Hannah's name right there. What's the Denzel Washington one? Did you mention that one?
Yeah, Book of Eli.
Yeah, Book of Eli looks really cool. So yeah, so I thought we since we have you on, you could talk about casting a little bit. I mean, casting is a big deal for your indie movies. I think that people graduate when they get to a point where they stop casting their friends
Yeah.
and they find some real actors.
We've
And
had
go ahead, Jay.
plenty. Oh, I'm just saying, we've had plenty of movies where it's just us and our friends, you
Yeah,
know, like
right.
running around doing stuff. So.
And I think our movies genuinely improved a lot when we actually started finding real people who. Yeah, and I don't care where you are. There's a theater troupe out there. There are actors where you live, and they want to work. And so I think you should seek these people out.
I mean, well, seek out local theater. That's the best place. That's how I kind of audition new actors or see people that I've never seen before. Actually go to theater shows.
Yeah. Look, yeah. Seek them out. Look for
And then
actors.
just like
And
throw yourself in there and introduce yourself, you know, right after the show.
yeah. And also, you can do little casting sessions on Craigslist. We've tried that, and that did well for us. But Hannah, what's you work in big casting. You cast big roles for big movies. And you do your own indie movies. Can you tell me some, differences I mean, what's different in casting a big movie versus a small movie?
Well, first of all, I totally agree with you that casting literally separates, the amateurs from the professionals,
Sure.
and I think that's very apparent in how your set is run, and even obviously in the final product. I think one of the biggest differences between amateur movies and professional movies is the casting, and it's been really cool to get to watch big time directors and producers sit in casting sessions and work with actors. And so, first of all, I totally agree with Jay. If you're an indie filmmaker, you need to put the time in pre-production to find a talented cast. And I would suggest to everyone to set up an actual casting session, which, depending on your area, means, first of all, you can speak to agents. And if you can't speak to agents, Craigslist, MySpace, Facebook, put a blast out to local actors to come and audition for you.
Yeah, and
And
you mentioned agents. How does someone even call an agent? Can anybody do that, or do you need to have some kind of legitimacy behind you, or?
yeah, I don't even know how to do that.
Luckily for me, I have a very good relationship with these agents because we deal with them in our job, but because of that, I have been able to work with them on non-paid independent projects. I mean, agents want their 10%, but they also want their actors to have practice. They want their actors to have reels. So they are very easy to work with, and their phone numbers are in the phone book.
Right.
All agents' phone numbers are in the phone book.
They
You
want to
give
be
them a
found.
call. Yeah, they'll give you their email address. You send them an email with the breakdown, and they submit to you. So if you're looking for a female 30-something with a hard-edged, druggy look, they're going to send you their submissions, and then you just set up an audition schedule and say, oh, I'd like to see these three of the 10 you sent me at this time on this day. And be prepared. That's like my biggest thing with directing. It's like, have an audition plan and be prepared to work with them and mix it up. Even if they gave you a perfect read, throw them a loop. Say, well, you just got into a car wreck before you walked into this room. And see if it affects their performance.
Yeah, and actors like to be challenged. They like that. They like to be directed. They like to be challenged. Don't be afraid to tell them what you want and see if they can do it.
I was going to say, Hannah, isn't it? I just recently, when I was casting for this last movie I was working on, I mean, you should, wherever city you're at, you should see what agencies they actually have there. And they actually have websites usually that have all the pictures of their clients and as well as like information about what they've been in. So it kind of gives you a starting point to know who you want to see too.
Totally. I mean, it's great practice even as a director. It's a lot of sometimes it's hard for us directors to get practice because it's a hard thing to put a film together. And an audition experience is worth a ton in terms of directing. It's a time for the actors and director to play around and try to, bring performances forth.
Can I ask you this question real quick? When you do call an agent or something like that, are they going to give you more like SAG eligible people or more SAG people, or is it your call as to what you want? I know
Well,
you've talked about.
I was gonna get into that. Yeah, I mean, SAG is the Screen Actors Guild, and some actors are into that. And I know what you're thinking, listening to us as an indie movie maker. We're talking about auditions. we're talking about bringing on real people, and you're thinking, I don't have any money to pay an actor.
Yeah.
And you got to know, actors will work for free if they like the project and if they're willing to do it, if they want to. They want to get their reel together and things like that. And then the Screen Actors Guild, I mean, if there's an actor in that, that means they have stupid union guidelines that you have to go through. It's usually just some paperwork. But go ahead, Jay. What were you going to say about that?
Oh, I was just going to say, like, SAG or no SAG, I mean, most actors will, they love to help out on projects because they just want the experience, or, you know, they just enjoy being involved in this process. So even if there's an actor who's SAG, more than likely if they're cool, they'll work for free. That's what I'm trying to say.
And all actors come from somewhere, and some actors are trying to get an agent. And a way to get an agent and a way to get things was having a reel. And a reel is just clips of movies that you've made. And so you can just tell people, you know, I don't have any money, but this would look great on your reel.
Yeah. Exactly.
Especially, well, if they're not even in SAG, that's one of the things. When you start getting into SAG, there's a lot of different rules that go into exactly if you're making a feature or you're making internet content. And, you know, if you call SAG, you can get representatives that deal with independent films that can give you more insight, because that's their job, is to tell you what they can do, and they'll point you in the right direction. I mean, that's their whole point, is to help you accomplish what you need to accomplish with SAG actors.
Well,
so
Hannah, why don't you tell us a little bit about what the SAG, what does for actors and what it does for the filmmakers?
Well, essentially, SAG is your typical union. So there are pros and cons. I mean, you have to pay dues.
Con.
And then ideally, they will help you find work. I do know that one of the perks is that if it's a big studio film and it's SAG, in most states, like in California, you can't work on it unless you're SAG. Now, there are always exceptions to every rule, and in New Mexico all the time, because most of our actors aren't SAG, or at least that was the case when I started working in casting, the production will taft-hartley you and help you join the union. And essentially, in New Mexico, you can do 3 films before you're forced to join. So the truth is, I mean, to answer Jay's question, if you call any agent is representing both SAG and SAG eligible and non-SAG talent, and they will give you exactly what you ask for. I do know from the SAG representatives of the region, any SAG actor who performs in an indie film and there's no paperwork completed and no pay, they could be reported to SAG and kicked out.
Right.
It is not a process.
Are there many cases of that, though?
No, I've never known it to happen, but it's everybody's responsibility, and I believe it's the producers of an indie film responsibility to tell their actors that, because SAG isn't telling them, and I know it's everybody's responsibility, like it's the SAG actor's responsibility, but I would hate to have to be in charge, you know, to work on a film where somebody lost their union standing because, you know, the SAG reps were at that guild screening, the what is it, the filmmakers something?
The New Mexico
Showcase. The SAG reps were there, and they literally talked to me about actors they saw in those films who weren't SAG and who they could kick out. But they're not. They weren't going to do it. But they.
Why would they even want to? I mean, why? What? This is what I don't get about unions. Unions love to be this whole exclusive club thing.
Well, I had a huge argument with them because I said, "Why don't you want your actors to act? Like, why don't you want your actors to act?" And the big thing is those films aren't making money at the New Mexico Filmmaker Showcase, so they don't care. But if that film went into wide DVD,
they want their cut,
They're about money. I mean, just like any business. But our act, you know, the other good thing about being in SAG is you get paid. You know, the SAG rate is $850 a day.
Mm-hmm.
So there are pros to being a SAG actor.
Yeah, but right. And as far as auditioning for big roles. Speaking roles are almost always SAG actors, and if you see anybody talking in a TV or movie, even if they're just saying "where's the bathroom" or a line, they got paid for a full day for that, typically, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and so if you see somebody, even if they have a big role in the movie, but if they don't say anything in it, it's possible that they were paid like what extras get paid, which is more like $100 a day. It's possible, but
it depends on the extra. But you know, yeah, featured extras sometimes. Yeah, they're featured, but they, and it's funny because you'll watch movies where there's a huge main character and they don't say one line and they're just like a featured extra. They don't
yeah,
get paid.
A movie I worked on, Hamlet 2. That if you've seen it, it's about high school kids, and there was about 7 key players, but then there was about 10 extras that were real high school kids that they brought on almost every day, working just as many hours, and they were getting paid in school credits.
Yeah. But they were happy to be there, right? That's how fair everything is.
Yeah, so what else, Hannah? So let's talk about this music video. We all worked on a music video the other day. So this is an indie music video, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, but aren't most music videos independently funded? I mean, there's not really, or are they paid for by music companies? I mean, how do music videos work?
I think that it depends. I think the market has become more independent, and I'm not an expert on music videos aside from loving to watch them. But you know, I think in the rap world, which interestingly enough, the 2 music videos that I've co-directed in the last year have been hip hop. That's usually the recording company's dollar. So those can be considered almost like studio productions. Like if, you know, David Wade was now signed by Warner Brother, the last video we did, and Warner Brother's going to make his next video. You know?
So you did a David Wade video. He's an artist, and he got, and that was before he was signed on. And then you said Warner Brothers picked him up after that?
Yeah, I think he made the music video to get recognized, right? That was the whole purpose of that music video, which is why it was indie.
Definitely. He was kind of a local celebrity, and we did this music video for less than $3,000, and people in L.A. who he now works with say they think it looked like a $100,000 music video, and our new video looks even better, and it's for the 478 Boys. So my co-director and I have more of like an indie rock sensibility, and mm-hmm. those videos are very independent. They tend to be, you know, local, like independent directors who, you know, most of the guys in LA have agents, they have managers, so they have people working for them to get them the jobs. But the artists are selecting nobody, you know, the artists are creating a relationship with the directors and usually choosing the directors. But I think the money is usually coming from a recording company.
Yeah, and but is it safe to say that every artist's first music video is an indie video before they get picked up? Or
I don't think so. Like, I would challenge someone to find an indie video of Lady Gaga. You know, I think
yeah, I guess
there
you're
are
right.
stars who make it huge first. But in the case of a lot of the music we listen to, definitely. And usually it's their friends, you know, who throw something together.
So if somebody wants to start directing somebody's indie music video, how do you do that? Or I know you guys kind of went through somebody hired you guys, right? Like they were looking for somebody.
Yeah, we were lucky because we were approached, which is a pretty awesome place to be in and mm-hmm. rare, I would say. But I think I did a very indie rock music video when I was living in LA, and I think it's a great way to be an indie filmmaker and a great way to get attention. I mean, some of my favorite film directors have come from the world of music videos, like Michel Gondry. And, mm-hmm. you know, whether or not you look at it as telling a story.
And McG.
And McG, that's right.
Spike Jones.
Okay, anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
A music video, you know, it doesn't have to be narrative, but you do have to create a language. So you're like, this is going to be our language for this video. And I think it's a good video if you're consistent. You kind of create a world, like a visually inspiring world. And the one piece of advice I would give is not to underestimate the amount of work it takes. I mean, what you can do for 3 minutes can take as much work as making a 30-minute short. I mean, if you
yeah,
really
just,
want it to
lots
be.
Lots of quick cuts, lots of different places. You know,
it's a lot of setups. It's
yeah, but you know, if you're interested in that, I'd say find a nice garage band in your town or your friend's band and make a video for that, because you know it's a good way to get hired is to show them what you already did.
It's good to like do your own shorts too, so you can kind of develop a reel to show these people, and you know you can get exposure that way too.
Right, directors
see
have
what
reels.
You see.
Directors have reels just like actors do. Yeah, it's very true.
I just completed my reel. So.
which you can see on ultimatumpictures.com.
Well, we'll link to Jay's reel, sure. All right, cool, guys. Well, I think that's enough for our first segment. We're going to go on to Schmollywood, and later we should have a really interesting review of Avatar. So we'll see you guys there. So, Schmollywood, it's Schmollywood time. This is where we talk about Hollywood Schmollywood. So today, when we're recording this, it is Sunday, December 20th, and this is the day where Starlet has died. Brittany Murphy was died this morning, so we have to talk about this just for a minute. It's a pretty weird thing when a celebrity dies. I mean, and we know it this year. This is the year of dead celebrities. I think they just had to squeeze one more out before 2010. But it's a strange thing. I mean, people are dying all around you. People die every second. People are dying in war. Young people, old people, babies. There's dead people all around this world as I speak right now. But when a celebrity dies, you kind of feel like you know them, sort of. You know, it's like, oh, that's a face I recognize. And people get really upset about this. And Brittany Murphy was a pretty interesting actress. She was in some good ones and some stinkers. And I think she was pretty talented in her own way. But you know, it seems like she may have had some personal problems, right, guys?
It's like that.
She probably had some demons. Yeah.
Yeah, so how are you guys feeling? Are you depressed about this? Do you care at all?
Well, for me, it was one of those things where, you know, it was, you know, you heard it and you go, oh, that's odd.
Yeah.
That's strange. But I don't know. I wasn't all that into Brittany Murphy, you know, so it was never like...
Well, so do you get more sad when it's actors you like that die than the actors you don't like?
I hate to be a, you know...
Well, why is that? Why do you? Why,
yeah.
Well, why, so. But why is that? Like logically, because, why would you care more?
I think because you like when you watch an actor you really like and all of a sudden they die. I think you invest a lot of time into those actors. You know, you're watching.
You invest some thought.
You go to the movies, you know, to see them specifically. You know, that's why you're there. A lot of people. That's why they're there, and I think you do kind of create an emotional bond with them almost.
Yeah, it's a strange thing. Hannah, how are you feeling? Are you all right about this? Are you coping?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, but I do think it's really tragic just because she was so young. I mean,
yeah,
actress or not, anytime a 32-year-old dies, it's awful.
Yeah,
it's
but
really
you could
awful.
But you could say, you know, 50, 32-year-olds died in Afghanistan this month, and you're just like, oh, bummer. But, you know, yeah. but when you say, you know...
Well, I mean, that's the power of filmmaking, right? Yeah. I mean, that's why I want to make films. I think that artists who want to tell stories through film can relate. It's like, I think kind of what Jay was saying is when we direct really good performances from these actors and when these actors are smart enough to take the right roles that really connect with an audience, we feel like we know these people. Like Heath Ledger, you know, I think people who didn't know him cried about that. And it's a strange phenomenon. You're right, Alex, but it's why our industry, which we probably would be happy to do our whole lives and not make a penny, makes billions of dollars because people always want like false connection.
Yeah, I guess. And and I immediately thought of Heath Ledger because that was the last young actor to tragically
die.
Yeah.
And it was a surprise. It was out of nowhere.
And so Brittany Murphy died of cardiac arrest. She had a heart attack. And 32-year-olds don't normally have heart attacks. So of course everyone's just screaming drugs, right? You know, that's everybody's first reaction, and which I think is kind of interesting because people say it really negatively, like, oh, she must have been cracked out or something like that. Whereas Heath Ledger dies of prescription drugs, and you know, he pretty much, even if Brittany Murphy died of a drug overdose or something, then her and Heath Ledger died kind of the same way, but people look at it differently. I think if it's a legal drug versus a legal drug.
Well, yeah, I don't think that anyone thinks that Heath Ledger died because of legal drugs. Everyone thinks he like basically made a Molotov cocktail of some prescribed drugs, some not prescribed drugs. But I think the main difference is in how we see these actors because of their performances. Brittany Murphy, I mean, this has a lot to do with casting because, you know, one of the biggest things I've learned through casting is the best you can do is to cast people who kind of are who you're looking for. And so Brittany Murphy always got cast as this drugged up, sexed up chick. and I doubt that it, I mean, I'm not judging, but it may not have been that far from the truth. Whereas Heath Ledger, he played a lot of like healthy, young, strapping boy, American boy roles. So I think we, you know, we like want to not think that he was a druggie.
Yeah, even though he pretty much was.
Yeah. Starting with Mary-Kate Olsen. That's
yeah. Right. And so I go on Facebook today and I write, and I write, so does this mean Brittany Murphy wins an Oscar? And so all of Facebook's mad at me today because I get the too soon comments.
People saying too soon is a cliche.
Too soon. I'm not emotionally ready to joke about Brittany Murphy's death.
But you kind of do it just so that we could see how people are going to react, right?
Yeah, I kind of do it as a social experiment. It's true. And because I think it's funny. And because I do think that Heath Ledger won an Oscar because he died. I don't think he would have won an Oscar for playing the Joker in a million years if he was still alive, personally.
Right. I mean, he could have probably, you know, potentially gotten some good praise out of it, but it would have never been the, you know, as crazy and as hyped up and as it was after he died.
Yeah, so we'll
see.
I would
like to make a recommendation to anyone who hasn't seen what I think is Brittany Murphy's best movie, and I hope there's no pun intended in the title of it, but it's called The Dead Girl.
Yeah, or Girl Interrupted. She's in that as well. But yeah, that's
another
pun.
The Dead Girl is a super independent movie from 2006, and she's awesome.
Yeah, oh, I mean, cool. Brittany Murphy did more than you think of when I was looking into her. Yeah, she was also the voice of Luann on King of the Hill, which she was pretty funny at, I thought.
And, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and she was, you know, and she was Ty in Clueless, which is a favorite for my generation, you know. So anyway, but that's really sad, you know, whatever, sad. But, you know, life's tragic. So let's move on. Let's do some trailer reactions. A lot of big trailers came out because it's that time of year. This is all movies that are coming out in 2010. So let's get into it. Let's talk about Clash of the Titans. What do you guys think?
I thought it was awesome. I mean, it looks pretty cool. I've always been, like, I don't know, into, you know, the Greek mythology and all that stuff. So I'm always curious when they actually decide to do, you know, do one of them into a movie. But this one looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it was better than I thought too. I thought I was, you know, I'm all these trailer reactions are all for sequels and remakes. That's all there is in Hollywood these days, sequels and remakes. So when I heard they're doing Clash of Titans, I'm like, oh well, it's about time. That hasn't been made in a long time, so
exactly.
Yeah, but yeah, go ahead, Anna.
I have two quick thoughts. First of all, I wasn't very impressed with the trailer, to be honest, but mm-hmm. I will right now make the prediction that the next vampire phenomena is going to be Greek mythology, and I've actually seen it coming and have a script in the works.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like right away, I mean, all of a sudden it's everything has Medusa in it, the Hydra in it. I think it's kind of amazing. I think
it's an
like,
approaching trend, you're saying.
I will say I think it's an approaching trend for sure.
I think that makes complete sense because a lot of filmmakers will say that they're waiting for technology to be at the point where they could do what their true visions are.
I hate it when people say that.
But anyway. Greek mythology is like one of the perfect examples of them, you know, getting to do as much special effects as they want to make the story as cool as they want to make it. But, I mean, it still looked good from Ray Harryhausen's one, I thought, so.
I hate it when directors say, I'm waiting for the – I'm sorry. I just – he's just chucking it. Yeah. I hate it when directors say, I'm waiting for the technology because that just means – or I couldn't do this 10 years ago. That just means they didn't challenge themselves enough to do it 10 years ago, in my opinion. But go ahead, Hannah.
I kind of agree with you. It's why I'm not into this trailer. Like, the trailer feels to me like overkill. I mean, that ugly turtle Kraken, like, that is not...
yeah,
that's
it was
not
a turtle.
It's so...
Yeah. I mean, it's an over CGI movie. I mean, I don't know. I kind of like these popcorn movies, but in the end, it has to be good, and it looks like it could be. I don't know. Jay, what do you think?
What I'm kind of curious about, and just in the trailer, like, I don't know what film stock they're using, but it kind of, like, looks like old, some of it looks like old, you know, like they, you know, it was taken from old film or something, you know, like,
you think they just did
dig up,
digitally?
Like, an old film from, like, you know, 1942 or whatever, and then you play it, and it has that, you know, certain look to it. It's like they're applying that look to this movie. Do you know what I'm talking about, Dominic?
Totally. Like,
I understand that, but... I mean, I don't know if it's just because it could
I think
be a
it might
digital
be the color palette that they're using.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Iron Man
Can
2.
I,
oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Really quickly, though, I had a question for you guys about Sam Worthington.
Yeah.
Because as a, like, I don't think he's interesting at all. Like, I like male leads who I think, like, both girls and guys can get into and feel, you know, like they either want to fuck him or be him. With Sam Worthington, I just find him super boring. What do you guys think?
I'm not impressed, really. I mean, he's hey. Not... I think he's not as bad as Channing Tatum, the
right.
who I think
True.
Is the worst actor in the world after
My boyfriend?
Yeah, no offense. After G.I. Joe, I couldn't even believe that that guy gets a paycheck for acting. But yeah, I'm not super thrilled. And the roles he plays so far that I've seen him in have really annoyed me.
He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, well, we'll see if he dies in the next couple of years how we'll feel about it. but, okay, so let's go on. Iron Man 2. This is huge. Iron Man 2 is coming out, guys.
This one I'm excited for. This trailer looked pretty badass,
Trailer was undeniably badass, I think. Anyone care to deny
that?
And
the first trailer, you know, for the first Iron Man, I thought was badass. Because, like, you know, when you heard that, you know, they were making an Iron Man movie, it's like, oh, he's... He was always my, you know, when I was into comics for that short time that I was, I never picked up Iron Man. There was something about that, just didn't interest me. But then, you know, I saw the trailer. And I think what they did with Iron Man in the movie was really cool. And this sequel here with the trailer just looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, what do you think, John?
I blown back. I mean, I think it looks really cool.
I was a little
I mean, at first that was, at first I was... kind of weirded out by what's his name being in there as a
Mickey
villain.
Rourke's accent?
Oh, I think he looks
Mickey,
cool.
Mickey Rourke.
Mickey Rourke.
Yeah. It was kind of what, but you know, it still looks pretty cool.
Well, what Mickey Rourke? The thing that concerns me a little bit. I mean, I don't know what villain Mickey Rourke's playing. I'm not too
Whiplash.
Overt. Whiplash. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he seems a lot like the last villain in the first one. It seems like he just kind of makes his own suit and fights him. But I guess that remains to be seen. Hannah, what do you think?
I have to say I'm extremely excited about it.
Okay,
love
good.
The trailer. I am concerned that I didn't pick up on a plot that felt very different than the first one. Like you're saying, like there's
yeah.
a villain, and also I have a feeling he's gonna be like corrupted by power, and then have to like taste what that feels like, and then come back around or something.
Oh, and I love how the government's trying to take the suit from them, and he just makes fun of them. I those bureaucrats.
I privatized world peace.
Yeah.
No,
and what's interesting about this, I'm even more excited about it because I know they were having like, you know, this is all, you know, hearsay or theirsay, but like when they were trying, you know, in pre-production, they were. All these issues that they didn't have a script or the script wasn't good enough or, you know, they had this writer and that writer and it seemed like pre-production was like a hassle. So to see the trailer
yeah.
and how good it looks now, I'm kind of, all right, I'm
and
over that.
And Downey Jr. is just awesome. As Tony Stark, it's the best casting ever. Anyway, yeah, so Iron Man 2, we're all excited for. One more trailer, Shrek Forever After in 3D!
It was okay.
I don't know about this one, guys.
Shrek has progressively gotten worse, I think.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Shrek 2 I like, but Shrek 3 was definitely nothing to write home about. And Shrek 4, I don't know, it's like takes place in a different dimension or something.
That
it's
way that all the characters can be the same, but new.
Yeah,
exactly.
But it seems like another episode in the Shrek TV series that doesn't exist yet. It just seems like a weird like little story to me that doesn't seem necessary at all.
Boring.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's like it's funny because the Shrek movies they end the movie in a little joke and then they have to like carry that on. It's like, oh, the dragon and donkey have little babies now.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh, well, now these babies are in the movie because we established them in the canon.
Yeah.
And they're really
yeah.
stupid, actually, but they were funny as a joke, but now they're all sitting at dinner.
Well,
and that looked really weird. That dinner table scene with the babies.
I think Shrek is gonna like suffer from, you know, the more that time goes on, and then when you go back to them 10 years from now, because they're all current pop culture jokes. Every Shrek has like all these pop culture jokes that are relevant to the time frame.
So you don't think they'll stand the test of time? You're saying
really because
like Disney movies.
You know, like 20 years from now when American Idol somehow, you know, does phase out, if it ever, right? You know, like
yeah.
they do all these American Idol stuff. And like, you know, 30 years from now, people are going to, what was that? Oh, yeah, I have to Wikipedia to figure out what's going on in Shrek.
Well, the Shrek movies are almost parody movies. They kind of parody Disney movies, and then they throw in stuff like that, like American Idol, like you said.
Well, I think
so.
The parodying of, like, Disney movies is okay. You know, that's fine because, you know,
because those are timeless,
people are going to watch those forever. But, like, when they, you know, reference
I know what you're saying,
things
yeah.
that are going on at TV and you know, whatever, it's like, that's not going to work.
Yeah, and they say The Last Adventure, you know, which always remains to be seen. Well, if this movie makes a lot of money, it won't be The Last Adventure, but unless they all die at the end, which would be great.
Maybe in that parallel universe it all blows up or something.
Yeah, and I think the Shrek movies half the budgets go to their actors. I mean, they pay
oh,
those
yeah,
people,
yeah.
they pay Mike 10, Myers, Cameron Diaz. Yeah.
Voices?
Yeah, they pay him a lot to stand in a booth for 2 days and be a voice.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
But Cameron Diaz probably looks the hottest as an ogre, right?
Yeah.
Ogre.
Well, it's better than her real face, I'll tell
That's
you that.
That's what I mean, dude.
Yeah, I saw her. Yeah, her in the box. It was like, ugh, good lord, what happened to her? Hannah, what do you think? What do you think about Shrek 4?
I agree with you. I felt so distracted by the little donkey dragons at the dinner table that I found myself like thinking about how that anatomy worked for the rest of the trailer, and I was bored.
Yeah, and the baby ogres too. I mean, I love how they don't have one baby; they have 1,000 babies, like they're kittens or something.
Yeah,
like the ogres too. Anyway, so Shrek 4, boo, right, guys? Yeah, but I'll still go see it in 3D.
Oh, we'll still go see it.
Yeah, I'll pay $15 for that ticket. Rip-off.
You will, you will. We will.
Speaking of rip-off bullcraps, we have Avatar coming up, and Think How I Think, so let's go to that. Okay, it's time for movie reviews. Think How I Think, How We Think, and we're talking about Avatar, the huge James Cameron 3D experience that you just gotta see to believe. It's gonna blow your socks off with Sam Worthington and Sigourney Weaver about Dances with Smurfs. You know about it. You probably saw it, so let's talk about it. Now, before I get into it, I think we should say, since I know you guys are gonna bring it up, you and Dominic and Jay got a hold of some kind of early treatment or early script of Avatar, like a long time ago, right?
Oh yeah, it was probably like, I don't know, 5 years ago.
Yeah, so you guys have known this story for a while. I mean, what was the treatment? It was like a 100-page like
the
100-page
treatment, yeah.
It's not really like an outline. It's kind of like a story written out.
It was just a story.
A little
yeah.
bit of dialogue.
Basically, it's a script but without the dialogue, you know.
All right. Right. So you guys, how'd you get a hold of that, Dominic?
One of my friends that knows other people, he just sent it to me one day. Because he was saying this was a new Cameron movie, and so I read it, you know. But it took me at least, like, 2 years to even, like, sit down and read it.
And then Dominic kept bugging me to read it, and then I finally did.
Yeah, because I had no one to talk to about it.
So you guys were excited for this movie long before anyone else had even heard of it. So what were your thoughts? Yeah. Dominic, go ahead. What do you like? What do you think about Avatar?
Well, you know, it's like 75% I liked, the other 25%. I didn't, especially coming from the fact that I'd already read the script.
What was the 75% that you liked? What do you like about it?
I like tons of stuff. The 25% is just the stuff that like I had problems with. Like there was a lot of stuff in the script that are in the treatment that I kind of wanted to see, and he explains things a little bit more thorough that he should have done in the movie. And I think just in general, when people are pompous about writing something themselves, that they're not exactly the best to write them, kind of like a George Lucas effect, that, you know, the dialogue ends up being really, really corny, like in this movie.
So are you saying this movie's poorly written?
I think that, yeah, there's some definitely, like, especially dialogue, there's just a lot of problems for me. And then some of the stuff that he left out that would have made it more clear what was going on, I think he should have put in, but he didn't, so. But for the other 75%, it's great. I really enjoyed the movie.
I don't buy your arbitrary number there. 75%. I mean, what?
Yeah, like 75%.
You 75% movie. You 75% like a movie that's poorly written, is what you're telling me.
Well, what I'm saying is that, like, there's some problems, but, you know, there weren't big enough for me not to enjoy this movie. And I think
70,
I mostly enjoyed it. So
75%
mostly
is a C. Like, that's not very good.
Well, for me, that's like, you know, it's because
Yeah,
it's a
but in the
mixed
movie
feeling
world, a
because
C is a good thing.
all I get from people who say they like it a lot is, oh, it just looked really great, or oh, it had problems, but I liked it. But no one can really tell me what they liked about it.
Can I pose one theory, Alex, which is just that people like movies for different reasons, and like for instance, I would compare this ride to, I mean, this movie to a ride at Disneyland or something, and for that, it gets an A plus.
Being a cool ride, roller
Like
coaster
a, I
ride.
was
Not a
gonna
movie that I would want to make, but it's and it doesn't say anything to me as a human, but it's interesting.
Okay, so
I
does
just have to say, I
but does
mean
that
before
constitute 75%? I mean,
for what I have
not
to
for me, but it
say,
could for Dom.
for the rest of it, like I was thinking about it the other day, and I was trying to figure out because yeah, I mean there's lots of stuff that I like, but there's a lot of stuff that like I just feel it's so weird because the experience for me was just so interactive and so cool and like there I was so skeptical about how the CGI was gonna look and how the 3D was gonna play off, but for me, knowing what Pandora was gonna be and what I saw and everything that the whole experience as a general, I just was blown back and amazed. And I don't think I've ever had that happen to me, probably since Jurassic Park for me. Like I was just
Wow.
totally blown away,
So
and I just was
so
I
this
was engaged. I liked everything that I was seeing, and it was just a huge experience. But on the flip side of that, I think, okay, this was a great experience, and it was meant to be 3D, so that says something. But to see it in a 2D, like just on DVD or just in a 2D auditorium, I don't know how much of the problems that I have would bleed into the overall story and how that would make me enjoy the film as just a film, as what it mostly
Yeah,
is to other people, which is an experience.
well, and I've been saying that to a lot of people too. If you didn't see this in 3D, you'd hate this movie. But Jay, what do you think?
I'll just say one thing about the treatment versus the movie, and then I'll make my peace with that, and then go on straight to
Okay.
the movie itself. But with the treatment that I read, it is much more thorough, and I think the story is much more developed
How
in
does
it.
a treatment get worse as a movie? Wouldn't it just get more developed as it
It
goes
was
along?
completely.
Not true.
The treatment, it was completely changed. And unless you read it, you won't know. But it was completely changed. Like in the treatment, we have this whole scene where it explains what a waste Earth is and how it looks. I mean, he just goes into detail of what a dump it is.
The movie
And
doesn't
you don't
show Earth
even
at
see
all.
that. Yeah, they don't even show it at all. And then there's like so many other creatures and these crazy things that are going on that are like, you know, wow, that's how is he going to pull that off? That seems insane. And all those insane things that, you know, were in the treatment actually weren't in the movie. And for example, I just remember like in the treatment when he gets stuck out there in Pandora by himself, he's there for an entire night. And it's the craziest messed up situation possible. It doesn't, you know, Neytiri or whatever doesn't come and save him right away. You know, I mean, he spends like he goes through the ringer just hating this world, and then the you know whole flip side where he actually learns
So
to appreciate it.
it's
But that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, so
Anyways,
wait, hold on.
moving on.
So as far as your treatment goes, it seems to me you're saying like maybe the treatment is like anything James Cameron could imagine he put in this treatment. And then
Yeah, that's
maybe
kind
when
of
it
what the treatment
treatment is.
It was more developed. Like
And then when it goes
when
to script form, maybe a lot of that loses it. At
Well,
least
you know
to
what
me, like a book
happens?
adaptation, like when someone
Exactly. What
adapts a book
happens
and you
is
lose
you
chapters.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean,
But at the
it's a,
same time,
it
I mean, he wrote
becomes
the treatment like, oh, I can totally see this. Like, I mean, it wasn't, you know, too much in a novel form. Like, it was there. It was on the pages. You know, it was ready. You know, he could have just, I don't know. It was very cinematic in the treatment that, you know, would translate well to the screen using this technology, whatever that he invented.
I
But
have to say though that if that movie was any longer, I would have stabbed my eyes out. Like
I think
I don't like movies longer than 2 hours, and I was actually fine with it being like 2.5. But I applaud him for self-editing.
Well, there was a point in this movie where I wanted to run out of the theater. I thought that I couldn't
Hold
take
on,
any
I'm
more.
not done yet. Hold on.
Okay, go what's good, what's up?
So as far as the movie is concerned itself, like I was engaged in it. I thought the 3D was probably the best 3D I've ever seen. Obviously, and I was engaged. I'll admit that I was engaged through the entire movie. But as far as the story is concerned, I had many problems with the story, and I was just like, ugh, come on, why? You know? But what I was so engaged with, as far as, you know, like visually, like some of it looked a little cartoony, well, a lot cartoony. I think the more Na'vi you put in the same scene, the same shot, it looked cartoony. But
the more the worse, huh?
The more the worse, yeah. But when it was just focused on one, like Materi or just, you know, Jake Sully character, like when you have just those shots of just them, I mean, it looked photoreal. I mean, it looked really, the rendering looked amazing on it. But yeah, the more the worse, like you said. And story stuff, I don't know. It just seemed, everything just kind of happened too quick. There was no time for, there was no process of learning with these characters. Like, what drove me nuts is, like, Jake Sully gets into his avatar for the first time, and all of a sudden he's running outside, you know, and he knows how to control it just out of nowhere, and, you know, whereas
yeah,
it's just like, oh,
I wasn't even thinking about that, yeah, but he...
and yeah, he's just stuff like that, where everything just happened way too quickly in that kind of regard, and then they go into, like, other things that I didn't, you know...
care about, like, learning to ride a dragon?
Well, that was cool. I'm going to admit that the whole Banshee sequence I thought was pretty neat. I thought the flying and everything was really cool, and I'm kind of jealous that there's no creatures here on Earth for us humans to ride like that in the air. I'm kind
okay.
of jealous.
Okay, Hannah, can you tell me anything positive about this movie besides how good it looked?
Well, I'd like to tackle that just from two quick angles. I mean, I do go to the movies to be entertained, and I'm very good about shutting off my critical brain and just enjoying something, and I will
I'm
say
not.
That I enjoyed this ride. But I have to say, I have to disagree with the whole 3D thing. I mean, I felt like they did not utilize 3D for what it could be at all. I was sorely disappointed, and I know that you guys are just going to laugh at me, but My Bloody Valentine used 3D so much better. It was like Captain EO or Neo or whatever, EO, where it's like you want to reach out and grab things and there's things flying at you and you're literally ducking. Like, they really used 3D for what it could be, which I felt like Avatar, yes, it was cool. There was like kind of a 3D world established within a box, but I found it more distracting than entertaining. And then for me, the main reason I go to movies and want to be a filmmaker is a story. And like, this is a good story. It's a sweet story, but I've seen it before. I mean, most notably in Ferngully, but definitely like, I'm tired.
Ferngully dances with wolves.
I'm tired of the raging steroid military man. I'm tired of the ambiguously greedy politician. I'm tired of the war, you know, the war hero. I'm tired of the relatively weak Pocahontas woman who's going to train her man to become better than her. I'm tired of the nerdy scientists. It's like there was nothing new that challenged me intellectually, and I felt really let down by that.
Yeah.
You know what was interesting with Sigourney Weaver? Like, everybody looked like, you know, the avatars look like, you know, Na'vi, but it just looked like they put her head onto a Na'vi. Like,
so ugly.
It looked too
so
Sigourney
ugly.
Weaver, didn't it?
And
so
Sigourney
weird.
Weaver should never be able to knot her t-shirts above her belly button.
So weird.
Hey, yeah, I didn't really like the whole, yeah, she always wore, like, what, it was like a college shirt or something?
Yeah,
I hated how she dressed like that in this tribe. It was like, yeah, she was basically in like what she does, what anybody would wear if they went to play basketball or something.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for Sigourney Weaver, but yeah, but that didn't save the movie for me. I thought this movie was awful. And I know what you guys are thinking, and you're thinking, oh, I wanted this movie to be awful. I hated it before I watched it. But I you just gotta believe me that that's not true as much as I never thought this movie looked good, but I was, like, shocked of how bad it was. And I am just running into everybody singing praises to this movie, but like I said, nobody can really tell me anything good about it other than the 3D look good. And I think the 3D did look good. I thought it was cool. In situations like this, it's happened in the past, like with Indiana Jones 4 and Spider-Man 3, where I just run into people and I just gotta tell them how it is. So here is the top 9 reasons that Avatar is a horrible movie. You guys ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so number nine. Okay, the fact that it cost $270 million, and I was gonna wonder, I was wondering what did they spend this money on?
We
To
spent more on that than that.
well, they claim 270. Yeah, they're thinking they say more like 350, and because what I saw basically was a 3D animated movie. I mean, it didn't seem too different for me from Finding Nemo and Christmas Carol and all these movies that that play in 3D. Not that Finding Nemo did, but I just didn't see what was so expensive. I mean, was it the catering? I mean, they obviously were in sets every day. And I work in the movies. I'm a location scout, and I just watch these movies piss away money all day long. Piss away money. You know, that's why I like the indie thing. And I just can't imagine what they spent their money on, besides maybe their own paychecks. But as far as what you said, Jay, about looking cartoony, I was real concerned about what was going to look real. And to me, nothing looked real. Nothing. It didn't
Yeah.
even matter what looked real. It was a cartoon. I mean, nothing looked real. It didn't look like a real environment. Didn't look like real creatures. Didn't look
But
real.
do you think that, because I was wondering this, it's such a different color palette, this world, that I mean, maybe creatures could look like that if they were really those colors,
Well, I mean, yeah, maybe, possibly, but in the end,
I just don't think we're used to that color palette.
I don't buy it though. It didn't look real to me. And the thing about these digital movies is they put cameras in impossible places, circling people, putting them in weird things, putting them behind trees and whatever. And that just makes it look even faker to me. If they shot it like a real movie, even if it is animated, I think it would have better things going for it. And I didn't think anything looked real. They had floating islands. The rainforest was I feel like if Pixar made a rainforest. You've seen Ratatouille. And how detailed that movie is, you know, how everything just looks so genuine. If Pixar made a rainforest movie, I think it would look much better than this.
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know. I like those floating mountains. And again, they explained the whole floating mountain things in the treatment that they didn't do here.
Well, nothing was explained in the movie. Okay, so
Nothing.
number.
Yeah, that did drive me nuts.
Yeah, no, the number eight reason this movie is horrible
Wow,
is
we only
the.
did one.
Yeah, is the is I didn't think the humans were believable. The human characters were so cliche, like Hannah said. So I don't,
Raw
you know,
meathead.
yeah. I mean, a heartless bureaucrat, crazy general. Yeah, meatheads.
They weren't bureaucrats, they were it was a corporation.
Oh yeah. That was the other thing. The whole thing was a corporation. It's a corporation looking
Who
for some kind of
hired?
energy source that has an army. They were a government. I mean, they can call it a corporation, but it was basically some kind of Earth government. And the government's a corporation anyway, so they
It
go
was
hand
like
in
Big
hand.
Lots or whatever that thing is from Wall-E. It was probably that same corporation.
Because people think hear the word corporation, and they just think that people who run corporations are the most evil people ever, which these people were. They were so evil. I mean, people that I know care about indigenous people. They have guilt about it. I don't think our future of mankind are evil, ignorant, stupid, careless people that are sociopaths. Do you guys?
No,
I do
and
not.
it works. It works if it's one character, I think, and then there are people who are torn because we're all flawed. And so if
They
there had been
showed
more of
that,
us,
though.
no, they didn't. There was
Yes,
not
they
one.
did.
There
No,
were either people who
Michelle
wanted to
Rodriguez's
kill the indigenous.
character.
Michelle
Go on.
Rodriguez, there was never a question about whether Michelle Rodriguez's character was going to be on their team or not. Never. She was
Yeah, it was
always
pretty
on their
she was
team.
torn. She's like, oh, I didn't sign up for this. And she flies her
Well,
helicopter
she was
away.
another
That was
cliche
the
character.
person who was
Never a
torn.
question about whether she was going to come and save them. Never a question about whether he was going to have his body transferred through the roots. So predictable.
Okay, so let's move on. Number
I'm just saying
seven.
those elements were in there.
Yeah, number seven reason this movie is horrible. The
They were.
Avatar program made no sense. The whole point of the movie, turning these people into Na'vi, made no sense because the Na'vi knew they were humans.
But at the
There
same
was
time,
no question. It's like, what's the point of putting humans out there dressed like Na'vi if it's not fooling anybody? I mean, it didn't make any sense to me.
well, it didn't make sense to me. You just brought up something because I was thinking about this. The Na'vi like knew they were, in like the sky, part of the sky people, but they didn't know they were like engineered or something. You know what I mean? They knew they were part of like, that corporation, but at the same time, they were still fooled by the fact that they were,
I didn't get that impression. I thought they knew that they were fake at Na'vi.
No, I think that they thought that they were They, like they're cousins on Earth or something.
No, because like when like you know he comes out of it, you know when he falls asleep as an avatar and then comes back out as a human, like and he's just kind of like a lifeless, you know, lump.
Yeah.
They freaked out. They didn't know why that was happening.
That's what I'm saying.
They
I
carried
think
him
they
around.
That,
I mean, maybe the first time. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Hannah.
I just feel like I thought that they were, because I asked myself exactly the same thing. I think that there were a few too many things that were, like, left up to the audience to discern, and I think they could have been taken care of pretty easily. I mean, I thought they were, like, you know, like, if there ended up being aliens who looked relatively like us and came to Earth, I thought they were, like, Na'vi from a different planet, and that's why the Na'vi were curious, and they were banded with the humans. But I don't think that they were supposed to know that it was humans.
All right,
moving their body.
But one more thing about the Avatar program. As far as I know, it was, like, a It was to study plants. Sigourney Weaver was a botanist. Before he got chased away by a monster, they were just looking at plants. They dressed up like Na'vi, went out there and looked at plants. Am I wrong?
And again, I hate to keep bringing this up, but the treatment does explain it so much more better.
Well,
I know
that
I
doesn't
know.
Matter.
That's neither hearsay nor theirsay.
Yeah, the
but
movie
I'm just saying,
doesn't.
It's yeah. I mean,
okay. Well, moving on.
I agree.
Yeah, number six. Number six, reason this is a horrible movie is the Na'vi weren't believable to me, and it was racist. Okay, here's what I mean
by the Na'vi weren't what? I'm sorry.
Weren't believable. Okay, and here's why I say they're racist, because they're stereotypical Indians. They're not real American Indians or Native Americans or whatever you want to call them. These guys are how Indians. I want to. Did you guys see Apocalypto?
Yes.
That movie, first of all, I think that movie's excellent. And second of all, Apocalypto had tribal people, but they were in families. They had friends. They had jobs. They had things to do. They were real people. You know, even if they're in this kind of, you know, this environment that
they joked around.
Yeah. You know, nobody had friends in this movie. The children, you barely saw children. Only when they're getting slaughtered do you see the children. You know.
Yeah.
And they weren't believable to me. And most of the scenes with the Na'vi, Jay, you're saying they looked fake. But five Na'vi had speaking roles, five of them, or four or five, and the rest of them just stood in crowds and looked on.
What do you expect them to do?
I
all of them talk.
I expected to see some culture. No, not all of them talk, but maybe show a minor Na'vi character. Maybe show someone with a personality rather than just a stupid Indian. Because that's all they were. They were stupid Indians. And not that Indians are stupid. I don't think Indians are stupid at all. But I think that's how Looney Tunes thought Indians were in the 50s.
That now, dude.
Yeah, I think Looney Tunes, you know, did really stereotypical Indian characters that were very similar to the Na'vi. And
are you sure you're just not seeing that parallelism because you're looking at Indians and then comparing them to this?
Are you telling me the Na'vi aren't supposed to be a parallel to the American Indians?
They're just supposed to be their own alien creatures.
Well,
I mean, if you're going to parallel them against everything, that's every
no,
single
but their,
no. trying to do that.
Their language
you know what I mean?
Their language was very Native American, I would say. And like the war paint and stuff like that. I mean, I agree. I felt a I don't know that I feel like
humans
strongly.
Did that before there was Native Americans. I mean, you know.
Okay,
you
well,
know, Europe. And
no, humans were Native Americans. We were Native Americans.
Yeah,
I mean,
humans.
We were all Native at some point. We were all Indigenous at
some
point.
That's what I mean.
Right.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but I'm saying that it would be false to say that there wasn't a purposeful connection because that language, whoever created that language, which I did think was very beautiful, it was very Native American sounding.
Yeah, and I don't like how there's only 200 of them that are living in this tree that's so important, and they just didn't buy the Na'vi. Let's move on. The number five reason this movie's horrible is the snake pterodactyls were stupid, I thought. Jay, you said you liked them, the banshees, earlier?
Yeah, those I thought they were cool.
Well, I mean, I don't think they look stupid. I mean, I'm fine with snake pterodactyls, but this is the only thing that the Na'vi find important, is whether you can ride one of these or not. They don't.
Well, it was this clam, though. They did it.
There was a super pterodactyl. There's an orange one that attacks them. And I don't know if they're attacking the other pterodactyls or the Na'vi. You can't tell. But they're just getting attacked in the air by this giant thing. And legend has it that only really special Na'vi are able to ride those. But in reality, all you have to do is fly over it and jump on its back. And then it's your pet forever.
You're
right?
Wrong. You're wrong there because he was the chosen one. I mean, that's the whole point of why that was so easy is this was all predestined and he was the chosen one and that proved it to the people.
This movie that's had predestiny and chosen ones? I didn't even pick up on that, and I hate predestiny and chosen
like
ones.
You could just, it's not like you could just jump on that thing's head and get it. I understand why you felt like that seemed too.
Oh, so Sam Worthington is Harry Potter Neo Anakin. I see. That's even better.
Well, you know, that's how stories work, though. I mean,
that's how bad stories work.
I felt like
you hate Harry Potter and you hate all those. Is that
no,
what you're
saying? But I hate the fifth book in Harry Potter when it turned him into a chosen one. I hated that aspect and I hated that prophecy. So I
but you're willing to forgive it, though.
Well, it's not a big deal in Harry Potter. It's not a big
There's
deal in this movie
been that.
Either.
Human, every you know.
Well, it's only for certain stories
like
that it works.
Well, I that just touched another nerve. I'm sick of chosen ones. All right, number four. Dominic, you mentioned this. Dialogue was Revenge of the Sith bad. I mean, oh my god.
Pretty corny. But hey, it's quotable.
there's a point in the movie where the guy who's like the real researcher, the one who's in the Avatar program, the one that's the minor character, he like says something like, "They're gonna destroy the sacred tree, which is the Na'vi's only connection to Iowa," and I'm just thinking, how do you say that with a straight face? And then
how
like,
do the actors not question what they're saying? They're
yeah,
like,
and there's a huge cliche speech. You know, to get the Na'vi together to fight the humans, and it's basically just this: they destroyed their planet, and they're going to destroy us. They
and
sent
your
us
children.
They sent us a message. They can take what they want. We'll send them a message. This is our land, and then that gets an army of people to you know I don't know, and just stupid little things like she's going to kill him at the beginning of the movie, and she doesn't, and they're like, why didn't you kill him? He had a good heart. It's just,
well, no, that
well,
was
it's,
the whole
it's because of the jellyfish.
That was the whole predestiny thing. Those little tree things that floated down, like it floated
tree,
over her bow.
Jellyfish, yeah.
Okay, well, the worst line.
But it floated over her bow, and then that's why she didn't kill him. Remember?
Okay, well, okay, fine. But the worst line was something that just drew the biggest laugh in the whole movie.
Oh yeah.
Was after the sex scene, which is uncomfortable. I don't know about you guys in your theaters, but in our theater, when that sex scene was going on, the whole theater was snickering and giggling. They wouldn't snickle and giggle if they thought it looked real. It's because we were watching cartoons having sex, which was. And then she says a line like, "We will mate forever."
We are mated for life. And
we are mated
was
for life.
The worst line of all time. You have to laugh at that because it's so cornball. It was just written bad. It was written bad.
And that's another thing I didn't buy about the Na'vi. They come back and they're just like, "Oh, you guys made it!" Like the whole community is outraged.
I would have rather seen that. I would have rather read that dialogue and heard it in the native tongue than actually hear her speak it in English. I think it ruined the whole thing.
I think it was poorly written to begin with. And then
Hannah was pissed. Hannah, you were pissed when the whole theater started laughing.
No, I didn't hear the whole theater laughing. I heard you and Alex guffawing like little boys, and I just thought it was embarrassing.
The whole theater was guffawing like
whole
little
theater
boys.
Was
yeah, it was
laughing.
Pretty. Everybody was laughing. But it's one of those things. Yeah, it's like George Lucas. It's like, oh, I'm gonna write this whole thing because I'm the best writer. And it's like, no, you're not.
Yeah,
you're
and I'm
that could do better dialogue.
And I'm getting to James Cameron's godlike status. Don't worry. But number three, I have the acting was unacceptably horrendous. I mean, the acting, just because they're motion capture and they're in front of a green screen doesn't give them the right to be such terrible actors. And I'm speaking mostly to Uhura.
I thought she did good.
The girl.
So did
I.
Have to be honest. I actually thought she looked good.
Oh, how could you think she did good? The girl who played Neytiri?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. First
of
all, she...
Uhura, who is she?
Well, she's Uhura. She was Uhura in the Star Trek.
What's her name?
Zoe Del Sano or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and remember I mentioned the point.
It's Zoe Saldana.
All right, whatever. And she's good in other things, but I thought this was so bad. There was a point in the movie, spoilers, where her dad gets impaled, and she just goes down there and she starts howling like a walrus for about 20 minutes. That was the point of the movie where I was like, get this thing off my face. I want to get out of here. I'm sick of this.
Really?
Yeah. Was that death scene was so bad.
You know, people view death very differently. Like, the Greeks, to scream like that should to show your pain. I don't know. It's just something different.
Well, Alex doesn't like screaming. We went over this.
Exactly.
She wasn't screaming. She was going, "Aah!"
That's how they do it. That was the invention of the Na'vi.
And the cat hissing. And Oh, I mean, and they didn't have good dialogue to work with, but I did not think that they. I was just like, I didn't buy any of their characters. I didn't buy any emotion. I wasn't invested in anything.
I wasn't impressed. I felt like it was very surfacey and it was more reliant on like the environment. I mean, as opposed to creating an environment where performances could happen, it was like the environment took over and the action took over, and so there was no room for like growth for the actors or for expression. But I have trouble. I mean, when you're talking about people like Sigourney Weaver, it's like I really gotta blame the directing and the writing more than the acting, to be honest. I just and especially when it's animated too, it's like somebody let that slide. And so when it's a whole cast acting bad, and a lot of them usually do good work, I've gotta blame the director and the writer, you know? And those happen to be the same person, so it's
Yeah,
like.
I thought all the acting was bad. But yeah, I'm not, I could agree with you that it might not be the actor's fault completely. But they work so hard getting their facial expressions and their movements captured perfectly. And then in the end I'm thinking they should have just animated this. They should have just made it completely animated characters, 'cause it would have, I don't know, the
You know what
acting,
I
I
should
thought
have
the
You know
acting
what I said?
showed.
I thought that they should have just put prosthetics on them, and then
Yeah.
CGI them, make them look taller with the just
Oh, but
because that would have.
that would make James Cameron go outdoors. I don't think they
I
would
know,
do
but
that.
I that's what I felt. I was watching it going, they could have used prosthetics, and it would have totally, it would have sold the movie
But yeah, and the love
better.
story was so cookie cutter. It was pathetic. Number two, okay, and this is my biggest issue with this movie, is the floating piece of asphalt. And what I mean by that is the MacGuffin in the movie. They don't even ever say what it is. You assume it's an energy source because this movie is very liberal. So you think that the humans are going after this planet for this energy source. And this energy source looks like asphalt. It's in a and he has it and the bureaucrat Giovanni Ribisi's character has it on his desk on a little floating pedestal, and he goes, "It's called unobtainium," which is basically just the worst name ever, because
Because it's unattainable.
it's unobtainable. So let's call it unobtainium, and it goes for 20 million a kilo, which means that thing on his desk was probably worth about a mil. I don't know how much. I mean, it depends
How
on
much
its weight.
does a kilo weigh?
Well, I mean, a kilo is a weight, so it depends how much that thing, how dense that substance is. But it looked like that chunk on his desk was probably worth a lot, and so it probably shouldn't have been on his desk. But anyway, it was
Well,
the
he's on Pandora. I mean, it's.
yeah. Well, anyway, so the whole reason the humans are on this place, being totally evil to these creatures and killing them gleefully, is because they want to get some unobtainium, and all of the unobtainium on this planet, or all the ones that they want at least, is underneath the home
Concentration.
tree.
It was a concentration of the substance.
Okay, and it's underneath the home tree. The home tree is basically Lothlorien. It's a tree where 200 Na'vi sleep in tents, or in nets, I mean, in little hammocks, and they live there. And as a libertarian who believes in the free market, the fact that these Na'vi would never just think of selling it to the humans for something is just so stupid to me. If there's something obtainable, they'll work out a trade. That's how the free market works, and I think that's how it's going to work if we ever find aliens that we want to exchange things with. And
Well,
did anybody ever bother to ask? It didn't seem like the Na'vi used it or cared. Did anyone just say, "Hey, can we have this stuff?" I mean, it was.
I think he was touching more on like human history of has always been like, oh, you have something that we want, so we're gonna come in there and take it by force,
And that
like with the Spanish coming
pisses me off
over, like
too.
taking gold. I mean, but that's what it was. I mean, that's.
But that's not human history. That's government history. That's governments that do that.
You
It's
know,
not people. People aren't heartless like this movie thinks they are. People aren't going. If it didn't, I didn't buy it. It wasn't realistic. I don't think people
that wasn't
want to.
real. Like that's never happened in human history. I mean, you can
It's
say
happened.
government, you can say this, but that's it was a government, it was a bureaucracy. What you were saying, and they were doing exactly what has been done for centuries.
True. I mean, and it's a statement on all of that. I know, but that's not what I mean. The fact that they don't say what this thing is, the fact that they don't even care to tell us what it is saying that it doesn't matter. It's saying that humans are that evil that they'll do anything for money, that they'll do anything for wealth, anything for energy. And people aren't like that, in my opinion. People have regret. People don't like hurting others and don't like wiping out civilizations. As far as I've seen in my lifetime.
That's happened too. You know, there's evil people out there.
There's evil people out there.
And it's happened.
And yeah, and this movie was just about evil people. A bunch of evil people got together, had some kind of corporation.
What happens if you take that element out of there's no conflict? It's like, okay, hey Navi,
well, maybe they could have
story going on here.
Well, sure, but they could have written a better story, in my opinion. I thought that MacGuffin the whole story was lazy. The whole story was. It was just like, well, they're after something. We don't have to say what it is. I mean, am I wrong about this? Do you guys feel like it doesn't matter what they're looking for?
Well, I mean, it's almost like you're concerned over where the camera angles are. I think you're just like, I don't know, taking it a little too personally and getting too upset about things you shouldn't even be thinking about.
Why shouldn't really? I be thinking of this?
I don't know. It just seems like you're.
It doesn't matter. I should just go into movies. I should pay $15 for a movie and just let it just. If I want eye candy, I'll do ecstasy and I'll let someone put a flashlight in front of my eyes and I'll be fine for 2 hours. But if I'm paying money and I want to see something better than just eye candy, I think that it does matter. I don't think I'm reading too much into it. I want my movies
you
to
are.
Make sense.
You're complaining
about
where camera angle.
You have this set of
I'm not
morals,
talking about camera angles, Dominic. I just said that made it look fake. I'm not worried about the
Alex,
camera angles.
You have this set of morals, these high standard morals for human beings, which is great. These are great morals. But you're saying that everybody should have these morals when everybody doesn't. I mean, they should.
No,
they're great morals, but like. People are greedy. People do this kind of stuff, and that's all it's saying.
It's saying all people are greedy. It's saying the human race is greedy. It's saying the human race is evil, and I find that offensive, frankly.
Well, this corporation is evil. That's what it's doing, you know. And it never showed what was going on Earth, which I think was like the downfall of everything. You know, it's like, oh, well, we assume that everything.
Yeah, and that was done in a line.
And maybe if we saw a little bit of Earth and what was going on over there, then you know we would have a different perception going in there.
All they said is they destroyed their planet. Now they're destroying ours. That's all they said. That's all that was said about Earth. And what I don't like about it is this is our future. You know, I can buy that we did evil things in the past. I can see that. You know, the United States stealing the land from the Indians was wrong. People know it's wrong now. I would hope that in our future the humans just don't go to different planets and rape it until it's gone, and we're that kind of parasitic.
We're like
species.
The creatures from Independence Day.
That's what Avatar is implying, that the human race are the creatures from Independence Day.
I mean, my biggest problem with it, I totally see what you're saying. I think you're taking it a little bit far. I mean, I think it's supposed to be a small selection of the human race, and it's the ones who have huge money and huge military backing. So, yes, I tend to think a lot of those people are evil, the extremely mm-hmm. wealthy, and those are the type of people who might go and pillage a planet. My problem is that it doesn't... It's not new. It's like, that's exactly what you're saying. I mean, we've heard this story 100 times. It's our history. Mm-hmm. It's partly our present. I mean, we're doing it right now. It's not. So when you just have these stereotypes of big money, big government doing the same thing, you're right. It's offensive to my intellect that that's like what I'm going to find to be an interesting plot setup.
I could agree with that. I think it's lazy writing. This movie is such lazy writing. He doesn't even come up with a name for the thing they're looking for. It doesn't matter to James Cameron. He thinks an audience is stupid, is what I think he thinks. I think he thinks
he thinks we're smart enough that we don't need to know what that we could.
No, I think I think he's stupid that people. He thinks people are so stupid they don't care or they won't ask, and it doesn't matter.
Well, here's a question that I have that's maybe along those lines a little bit, where I feel like it's lazy. Like he kind of missed the boat with the writing is. And I'm asking your guys' opinion because maybe this is sometimes I just don't get it right. But I felt like one of the coolest potentially suspenseful elements was that these bodies, the human bodies, when they're out there in the Avatar and the Avatar is faces these life-threatening situations, especially Sam Worthington, whether or not that person dies, if the avatar dies. And, you know,
yeah,
I
isn't
leaned
that
over
important?
To,
yeah.
No, but I think they explain
and,
that.
No, listen, I leaned over to Jay and I asked him in the middle of the movie and he said, I don't think they know. That's totally fine with me if they don't know. But someone, Sam Worthington preferably, who you'd think would care, should have asked the question. It's a quick dialogue line. And the answer can be, well, we've never had that situation. Then the suspense is there. Oh, my God. Instead, it feels to me like it was totally forgotten about.
Yeah, and Neo asked before he went to the Matrix. He said, do I die in the Matrix? And Neo's an idiot, so he asked, but Sam Worthington didn't.
Yeah, nice point. It's a pretty important thing for me to be engaged in his well-being.
Uh-huh.
No, I agree with you there. That bugs me about a lot of movies. There's a lot of movies that all they can explain so much with just adding one line. Harry Potter, the third Harry Potter, explain everything in one sentence of where the Marauder's map came from.
I think Avatar would take more than one sentence.
But
I know what you're saying though.
Just for general knowledge, I think you live, right? Because didn't, what's his name, the other guy's avatar get shot in the final battle, and then he, like, wakes up in the...
Yeah, and that's the other thing. If you live, who cares? Send a million avatars in there. Send avatars in there just to
go steal...
Well,
it's an expensive program, and not everybody is genetically capable of handling...
And it takes 5 years to grow them.
Yeah, it takes...
Well, I didn't get the impression... I mean, I didn't get the impression that he definitely lived either. I think maybe James Cameron doesn't know the answer, because what he did was look like he was having, like, that he was in severe pain where his avatar had been shot. So I don't know if somebody took a knife to your avatar's face and cut your face up. Seems like people can die from experiencing, you know, transcendental pain.
Yeah.
So I don't think that was very clear either.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's go back to my list. The nine reasons that Avatar is a horrible movie. Quick recap. We're at number one. 9, it cost $270 million. 8, the humans weren't believable. 7, the Avatar program made no sense. 6, the Na'vi weren't believable and racist. 5, the snake pterodactyls were stupid, in my opinion. 4, dialogue was Revenge of the Sith bad. 3, the acting was horrendous. And 2, the floating piece of asphalt. The number one reason this movie sucks is James Cameron, the king of the world, like Dominic said, is old and he sucks now. Have you guys seen the movie Trainspotting?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a theory presented in Trainspotting that I think is true when it comes to artists, is they get old and they start to suck. They lose, especially when they're huge successes and they're rich and they're out of touch with reality and how people are. And I think George Lucas has suffered from this. I think M. Night Shyamalan has suffered from this. And
Spielberg,
I think,
definitely.
Spielberg has, and I think James Cameron has too. But, you know, I'm not blaming Cameron for that. Anyway, in Trainspotting, they talk about Sean Connery. And it's a whole Sean Connery theory about how people just get old and they're not cool anymore. And
they use all those creative juices and it just drains them.
Well, you know, I feel like when you're like us, when you're poor, when you're doing it for art, when you're doing it out of love, desperation, whatever. I think most filmmakers shine at that. I think it's Spielberg excelled.
Yeah, Spielberg said that. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, but yeah. But I think
when he was talking about Duel, he just, you know, he just said that I could never have made that movie now because I just wasn't as, I mean, I was so ambitious,
crazy,
and desperate.
Ambitious and passionate about, like,
yeah,
you know,
and
okay.
Duel's a great movie, much better than Indiana Jones 4, his latest one. But right. And I think a lot of it is the Hollywood hierarchy that is out there. And you guys worked on sets. You see it. It's a hierarchy. Some people just aren't questioned. I look for locations all day for a production designer. Sometimes it doesn't know what they're talking about. It's so frustrating, but I can't do anything about it. There's this hierarchy. And I think James Cameron is just at this godlike status, and nobody bothered to tell him that maybe this movie could have used a rewrite, like Episode 2 Attack of the Clones could have used a rewrite, you know?
Or they do tell them, and they're just like, eh.
Or
no,
like, or what do you know? I'm the biggest movie maker in the world. Who knows? But in any case, it comes out crappy, and I think people are just so bought up by the hype that I think when they do see this movie as a movie, when they watch it on DVD, they're gonna say this is a boring piece of crap, and I don't know why I liked it when I saw it. That's what I think.
Here's my thing. Like, you see all these commercials that say, you know, it's going to change movie making forever. And I'm not in the actual business, you know, at that advanced or high up there. I don't think it will. I think, you know, maybe some directors will, you know, use some of his technology that was invented, which I think is really cool that they really pushed the envelope as far as building brand new cameras and stuff like that. But, you know, it's movies are, you know, they'll progress and this isn't going to change.
Well, I think what they meant when they
I
said that, what I think what they meant when they said that is just the entertainment value of 3D. And as for so long,
maybe,
I mean,
yeah, maybe
3D
the
has been
element,
as
yeah.
put as Hannah was saying earlier. I mean, she likes things trying to poke you in the eye and stuff, and that's the whole gimmick of
Yeah.
3D that's
But I
been around for
appreciated that it
ages,
didn't do that. I mean,
you
there was a
know?
couple, but
Right, but what the thing is that they're trying to get away from that gimmick of, ooh, 3D, I'm gonna come out at you and
yeah.
just try to create a diorama kind of thing where it's just a new experience, you know? So
I
I
mean,
think
I
that's what
like
they mean by that, is that more, especially in fantasy, sci-fi, those kind of movies, that this is a new way to tell their story that will engage you more into their new world.
I don't think
That's what I'm thinking.
I think it's a distraction to me. I mean, I and don't get me wrong, I like 3D. I think it's fun, but but this was about the sixth 3D movie I saw, and it didn't hold me in the 3D part of it. I mean, I thought 3D in other movies were more impressive, and other trailers that are more impressive. I think this How to Train a Dragon movie looks like awesome 3D. It kind of blew me away, and I don't know. I don't think it's a breakthrough at all. I mean,
I think,
I
well,
think
in
3D
the.
technology is kind of a breakthrough. It's fun. It's going to keep people in theaters. I like going to movies in 3D. I think they should keep making them, especially animated movies in 3D. But yeah, but as far as changing the way movies are made, not really. It's going to
No,
change
I
how
think
movies
what
are
it's going to
made.
do is it shows people that you can make a feature-length movie in 3D and people are going to go see it big time because they want to see that experience and want to. What, you
Sure.
know, the kind of experience that I had with Avatar, which is just like I was blown
Yeah.
away by the
Michael
whole
Bay,
environment.
my favorite director, says it's all a gimmick.
Right, it could be, but with a movie that's
Michael
making
Bay.
this much money and bringing in this much people
Okay,
into
it made
three
$70 million.
D,
Hold on, check it
It
out.
made
I'm
$70
looking.
million dollars, and it's a $15
Carl, let me
ticket.
talk.
Okay, what? What do you want?
Oh, I'm
Sorry,
sorry.
sorry.
I'm just looking at this thing on a website, Deadline Hollywood or something. So it's made $232 million
Worldwide.
Worldwide.
worldwide, which is the studio saying is the highest original content, non-sequel, non-franchise, what they mean, opening weekend ever.
But they're not mentioning that it costs $5 more than every other movie in the theater because it's 3D. Does that come into account in this box office?
I'm sorry, what was that? What was
Does.
that these are $15 tickets instead of $10 tickets.
Right.
Does that matter? I mean, I don't
Well,
think box
that.
office matters anyway, but
Right,
is that being
it's but
accounted for?
it's I don't think so, no.
Yeah,
But
so.
that's including the other theaters that are in completely 2D too.
Well, Hannah, what do you think? Is this going to make
'Cause yeah,
people.
this movie is on more screens in 2D than it is in 3D.
Yeah,
Right.
well, Hannah, what do you think? Is this movie a breakthrough?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's going to. I do think Dom is probably right that it will unfortunately encourage more people to more mainstream directors to do 3D, and I will be surprised if we don't see a Michael Bay 3D movie in the next 3 years.
Yeah, it could
He
come
said
out.
he would never do a, he said he would never do a 3D movie.
I'm
But
sure he
again, yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
if a studio
But
pressures
so
him into $1 million.
I think this will encourage them, unfortunately, but I don't think it was anything, it wasn't anything groundbreaking for me to watch. But I do love to go see him. I mean, I'll still go see more of them.
Yeah, me too. I like
I like them,
even
but they're a little too pricey right now.
they're too
They are
pricey.
too freaking expensive to see.
And I think the movie makers are not giving the audience enough credit. I think they're thinking they're dazzling them because the last three or four 3D movies I saw, I didn't like. I didn't like A Christmas Carol. I didn't like Coraline, and I didn't like Up. I thought that those movies weren't very good, and the best part of all those movies was the 3D, and I thought the stories lacked in all of
Well, and
those.
then unfortunately, you're dealing with corporations, and all they're seeing is the bottom line, and
Well,
that
that's just
they've
Hollywood in
almost made
general.
back all their money on Avatar already. You know what I
Well, I
mean?
mean,
That's
I mean, what I think is that
unfortunate.
3D is often going to be a replacement for story. I mean, that's a little bit how I felt about Avatar, and it was almost enough, but not quite. And
Right.
you know, but you know, in My Bloody Valentine, I hate to bring it up again, but it was enough of a replacement. Like that movie is stupid, except for that it was 3D and it was badass because it was a 3D and it was a ride. But if I ever had to watch like if I was going to go see Trainspotting, but it was in 3D, I would find that ultimately distracting. Like, mm-hmm. just tell
oh, yeah,
me
but
story.
It's definitely for specific genres, you know, for sure.
Well, and, so, and some genres...
see a branch out. I think Avatar was already a branch out, because this is, like, practically a classic love story.
Yeah. But the thing is, Hannah, I thought in Avatar, like, the 3D, the animated sequences were fun in 3D, but the live-action stuff looked weird.
I totally agree. It was... I mean, you gotta totally rethink about how you shoot a movie when it's 3D, because those awful... I mean, I tend to love minimal depth of field, but it's like anytime there was a really long lens, it's like Sam Worthington's head feels like it's 2 feet from my face and completely blurry.
Yeah.
It gave me a headache. It's like, well, you can't shoot this movie the way you'd shoot another movie then.
And there's a point where they're looking at photographs, like taped to a locker, and the photographs are in 3D. It's like, what? that was a 3D camera or what? It made it worse. What about you guys? Did you like the 3D in the live action sequence?
I did. I liked 3D.
Yeah, I did. I kind of like those photographs being 3D. Yeah.
Okay,
like the photographs in 3D.
Oh, wait, one at a time. What do you guys say?
Oh, sorry.
I mean, it kind of
added with this whole futuristic, you know, setting. You know, the photographs are 3D and stuff like that. It was just
so
was
you're saying those photographs are supposed to be 3D photographs, like they're
yeah.
like they're in
because
the, like they're from Hogwarts.
Or something like that, because I know that they definitely, you know, when you're doing the 3D process, you tell the computers what you want to be in 3D and what not. And so I'm sure that was a choice to make those in 3D. And, you know, you're already seeing those now.
I'm not saying it's not a choice, but I'm saying it would look stupid. Jay,
do you like
those photos?
Hologram.
I was surprised at how, I don't know, I how... How un-3D it was. I mean, I kind of was into this illusion. I kind of was immersed in it, and I was surprised that it wasn't exaggerated more, the 3D. And that's just how I viewed it.
Surprised happy or surprised disappointed?
No, I was surprised. I thought the 3D was done, you know.
Because, Hannah, you're surprised disappointed. You're disappointed it wasn't gimmicky enough.
Yeah, she... That's the way it seems.
I felt like it walked such a thin line that it was distracting more than, you know, it wasn't enough for me, but it was, then it was too little. You know, it's like, I don't,
yeah.
I mean, for me, like, I'm such a cinematographer at heart. When you block a scene and you have carefully chosen camera movement, I never watch a movie and feel like I'm watching a 2D movie. I feel like I'm watching a 2D movie when it's
yeah.
well done. I'm there with them. So if I'm gonna watch a cartoon or something or horror and it's 3D, that's fun for me. When I'm in this movie, if I was supposed to be invested in anything other than the 3D, all it was a distraction. Like especially like the out of focus ash falling and stuff like that. Like I felt like I had a fuzzball in my eye.
And it worked. Boom, the 3D worked. Right.
All right, well, I mean, I was hoping you guys would convince me a little bit more to like this movie a little more, but you didn't, so I think you guys are being apologists. I think you just wanted to like
Why do you... I don't understand why you say apologists. What does that mean?
Well, I guess that's not an accurate term.
I liked the movie, and I was entertained. That's my opinion, and that's something that I experienced. You can't tell me that I can't.
No, I think you bought into the hype because
no,
it's
I
a...
didn't. I was so skeptical going into that theater. I wanted to like it, but I was skeptical. And I came out liking it.
Yeah, but I don't see why you liked it. You can't tell me a reason why you liked it besides you had fun. Because that's happened in Indiana Jones.
That's a movie. You want
to
go
No, look,
have
dude.
Fun.
Indiana Jones 4, I hate it. And anyone defending it, well, why did you like Indiana Jones 4? It was fun. At least it was fun. You know, I didn't have fun at that movie. I hated that stupid movie.
Well, that's good. That's your subjective. That's your answer.
But that's not a reason
to
like a movie, because it was fun. I mean, I
Why
I
is that not somebody's reason to like the movie?
I mean, it could be a reason,
yeah.
but it's not a good reason. It's not a critical reason.
Well, you know, that's the audience. I mean, that's when we make movies, we're making it for the audience, and it's subjective.
Entertainment.
But he's going to take it in
differently.
I would say Plan 9 from Outer Space is a fun movie that's not good. And I'd say Avatar is, too.
Oh, so you had fun.
Well, no, actually, I didn't. But I'd say for people who had fun, it's like watching Plan 9. It's like having fun at Plan 9 from Outer Space.
I'd say it's a fun movie that's not good. That's my category.
I mean,
right?
And I've said it's a fun movie that's 3/4 good, is what I mean.
Yeah, but you have
C plus.
Yeah, your C plus rating. Okay, well, I think that's enough of that, guys. Thank you all for sitting through that. I know it was a rant, but I get into these things.
I top 10 list, guys. He had a top 10 list.
Yep, I do the
top 10.
Top 9.
Yeah, it's a top 9.
Oh, but I have the 10th one for you, Alex, which was that the tree bringing that fuck back to life.
Oh yeah, which was so predictable. The second it doesn't bring Sigourney Weaver back to life, you knew it's gonna bring. You know, this movie was so boring. Okay, well, anyway, guys, thanks. Okay, so thank you to my co-hosts. Thank you, Jay, Dom, Hannah.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I loved it.
Okay, good. I'm glad you had fun. Thanks very much for listening. Please visit indiemoviecast.com. We welcome comments, questions, and suggestions, so log on and contribute. And remember, we don't only talk the talk. To see the movies we've made, log on to ultimatumpictures.com. And please, if you're on Facebook, become a fan of Ultimatum Pictures on Facebook. So on the first episode, I said Indie Movie Cast was copyright, but we're not a copyright. I put these movies right in the public domain because I think that's where many things belong. So Indie Movie Cast was put into the public domain in 2009 by Ultimatum Pictures. So long, everybody.
Good night.